we could actually bind or graft some organic chemistry onto silicone, you could make actually a sensor that could duplicate this, the human sense of smell. So we've been able to duplicate pretty much any sense, any human sense, eyesight, you can listen, you can do many, many things. But the sense of smell is pretty tricky to duplicate. So this original bet of, you know, binding actually or using organic chemistry, which is very similar again to what, to the way your nose works together onto silicone, was actually the whole principle of what we wanted to do. And that's what we've been working on for the last 7 years.
Hey everyone, welcome to Brains Behind AI, show where we meet the innovators, entrepreneurs, and the real brains behind some of the most successful AI startups. We ask them about their journey from coming up with the idea to finding the product market fit. And from their experience, draw a set of principles that we can take away to ours. This is your host, Ari. Thank you for spending time with us. And now, let the show begin.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Brains Behind AI. We have a great episode in store for you today. For our guest is Sam Guillaume, and Sam is the CEO of Arevale, which combines biochemistry, advanced optics, and machine learning to mimic the human sense of smell. As CEO, Sam is responsible for the overall strategic direction and investor relations. Prior to Arevale, Sam was the co-founder and CEO of Movia, growing the company to the leading motion sensing technology and eventual acquisition of Evansense, the leader in inertial sensors for consumer electronic applications. Sam brings over 20 years experience in the microelectronics industry to the Arevale team. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sam, before we dive into the company, let's take a minute to learn about your personal background. Where did your personal journey start and how did it lead you to Arevale?
Yes, thank you. So I'm an engineer by training, and I realized that I was missing too much interaction with people, so facing my computer. So at one point in my life, I decided to move into more people management, and then it took me to marketing and sales and so on and so forth, right? Which eventually leads you to, I think, managing a startup. So that's it's my fifth startup, and I really enjoy the journey very much. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect balance for a tech and emerging tech CEO, where you have the tech background, you get the technology, and you have the experience and expertise to take it to market. So that combination is great, actually, especially given what you're doing. Now, coming to the idea here, how did the idea of getting into odor analytics and smell happen? Where did it start?
So it all came from a very nice encounter with a gentleman called Tristan Roussel. And Tristan and I have been friends for many, many years. And we were running actually our own company many years ago. Tristan sold his company, and after he sold his company, he was looking for his next venture. He has a biological background, and he met some a good technology from a public research institute in France, Grenoble, called CEA. And as a biological engineer, he found a few of this technology, which was mainly used for a pharmaceutical industry. But he could see that there was some great opportunity if only he could actually we could use this technology into air as opposed to liquid. It was actually designed for liquid environment. So that was the original bet, if you will, that Tristan made. And since it involved sensors, he brought me into that story. So we essentially started this company 7 years ago, which is a mix of semiconductor sensor expertise with significant biological content. So that's how it all started, right?
How did the idea of getting into odor analytics and smell happen?
So the idea came from, can we mimic the principle of human sensing? Human sensing of smell. And if you think about it, your sensors in your nose are organic, made of organic chemistry, which is pretty innovative when it comes to semiconductor, because organic chemistry and semiconductor, they don't bind very well, right? It doesn't really match, work very closely. But if we could do this, right, you could come up with something that is as close as it can get to the human sense of smell, while at the same time use what we as industrial members, right, we know very well about the semiconductor industry, which is to process silicon, right? So if we could actually bind or graft some organic chemistry onto silicon, you could make actually a sensor that could duplicate this, the human sense of smell. So we've been able to duplicate pretty much any sense, any human sense, eyesight, you can listen, you can do many, many things. But the sense of smell is pretty tricky to duplicate. So this original bet of, you know, binding actually or using organic chemistry, which is very similar again to what, to the way your nose works, together onto silicone, was actually the whole principle of what we wanted to do. And that's what we've been working on for the last 7 years at Arriva.
Yeah, that's amazing. And as I think about it, I can see how hard this can be, because solving for smell and odor is definitely at the frontier because it's so relative. So as you work on the solution and as you work on the technology here, what is the business case here? What is the opportunity that you see for the technology you're building?
So there is essentially two ways to look at this, right? One way is to say, well, I'm able to duplicate yet another sense, another human sense, and I can do, you know, with an artificial nose, you could do things like, you know, quality assessment. You know, you want to control the quality of a specific flavor. You want to, you know, taste and smell are very closely linked, right? So you could also, you can also do some artificial testing, if you will, right? So that's one way to look at it. I prefer to look at it from a different point of view, right? When you look at the way we humans are made, right, we essentially collect and fuse many many information, right? We fuse touch with, you know, temperature, with vision, with smell, with many things, and we build actually a whole context. By providing such a sense now, you can actually provide systems, machines, equipment, smartphones, you know, connected devices to do contextual analysis, right? And I very much believe that bringing the sense of smell will be as close as we can get to convey emotion, because, you know, most of the senses that we have been able to duplicate until now, I call them cold senses, right? They are rather cold and distant. Whilst olfaction, I very much believe that it will provide and convey emotions, right? So now you think of a system that can capture and eventually transmit and convey emotions, right? So I think that's really the way I like to look at what this whole new sense actually can bring to the body, right? It's really a significant change. It's a leapfrog, actually, in terms of bringing content to the context that you're trying to capture.
No, that's fascinating. And did you always have this idea in your mind that you wanted to do something with sense of smell with your, or like prior to 7 years ago starting the company? Was this an idea that you've always had in the back of your mind to tap into?
It's a very good question, because I've been in the sensor world for quite a few years. The last one was olfaction, and it was a very nice opportunity when Tristan mentioned this opportunity to start Arriva. It was a great opportunity that, you know, personally I could not miss, right? Because there is too much, there was too nice of a promise ahead of us, right? So for the reason I was just mentioning before. You could think about it, right? But the reality was not there yet, and now it is.
Wow. And how did you come up with the name, Arriva?
So Tristan did. Arriva actually is I think it's Greek, ancient Greek, for a small amphora, a small container to carry perfume, right? So it's you can find this in museums today, where you can see very small, tiny bottles essentially that were used to carry perfumes. Pretty smart name, I guess.
Interesting. So where are you with the business today? Are you still in the R&D phase, or do you have a technology that's validated and you're thinking about production and scaling what you have built? What is the state of business?
So we are just at the transition of starting the industrial process, right? So we are investing now into a manufacturing line, right? The first few years of the company have been really about taking out a technology from a research institute into a company, right? So there was a lot to do about performing the technology itself, you know, working on reliability, working on performances, working on cost, of course, right? And we've done this for the last 5 years, roughly. And for the last 2 years or 1 or 2 years, we've been investing into really making this technology compatible with, you know, low cost, very high volume, and very small dimensions. Essentially, it fits on the size of a nail, and we can make it actually by millions eventually. Right? So that's really what we've been working on for the last couple of years. And now we are investing into this manufacturing line to initiate, you know, and start ramp up.
Yeah, that's great. It looks like you're about to scale. So how big is your team at this point? And where is your team located? Do you have everyone in and around France where you are, or is it more of a virtual setup?
So we are about 50 coming to 60 today. We have actually offices in Grenoble, France. We have offices also in New York. We just opened an office in Seoul, Korea. And then we have also a sales representative in Germany. So we are across actually these 4 countries, which is pretty much where, you know, our customers are located. Yeah.
And that kind of transitioned into my next question. Are there any specific industries that you're tapping into at the moment or really focus on targeting?
Yeah, so if it's if you are on the daring side, you know, the first question that comes to you is, you know, is it any good? So is this good? I should be able to, this technology should appeal to people from the olfaction world, right? So we were very lucky to meet and now work with a company called IFF based in the US. IFF stands for International Flavor and Fragrance. And God, they know a lot about olfaction, I can tell you, right? So they've been essentially educating us at first. And now we are working very closely with them to really, you know, drive the performances of the device, right? And make this, you know, make it so that tomorrow it can be pervasive, right? So there is something that I'm sure you realized already, but when it comes to smell, there is no absolute reference. There is no units. There is no universal way to you know, decipher or to convey a smell, right? If I'm here and I tell you it smells strawberry, it's very likely that my definition of strawberry is different from you, right? From yours. So we have also to come up, and that's what we're working on with our partners, including IFF, of course. We are working on a way to make actually the sense of smell universal. And with such a device as we've been able to develop, you know, it's absolute in the sense that, you know, once you make a measurement with this device, you know, it can, once the device has learned a specific smell, it can record it and it can find it again after, right? So it's as close as you can get from, you know, what we could eventually call a startup, right? I think we are very close to this, right? So back to your point, flavor and fragrance was the industry that we wanted to work with, because again, if it was appealing for them, it would be appealing for many more industries, right?
You're solving this very difficult problem. And one thing I'm curious about is, as you have taken on this journey from an idea to where it is now, and as you're thinking about production and scaling out the technology, I want to understand, what are some of the challenges you encountered in solving for this? And how did you work around those challenges?
So this one definitely is one, the fact that there is no units. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really, you know, you make subjective measurement, which, you know, it's an oxymoron when you think of it, right? You know, it's like, doesn't really mean anything if I make a measurement and I cannot reproduce it, or you cannot reproduce it, right? It's a little bit actually a counterintuitive, right? The lack of standardization, the lack of units, the lack of, you know, we were not able to be deterministic at first, right? So we really had to work on this, right? That was one point. The second point, which is very related to this, is that you cannot describe a smell with any kind of formula, right? So that means that unless you have the right technology, and in that particular case, we will be talking about machine learning, right? Unless you have such a technology, there is no way you can do something like this, right? vision, you can actually write formulas about vision. You can define actually, you know, a specific color with a specific wavelength, a specific intensity. So you have some attributes that can, you know, define a color. Smell is really tricky. And again, being unable to describe actually a smell, you have to, you know, use technologies that, you know, were not readily available, you know, 10 years ago, right? So we had to reach this level of this maturity with, you know, technologies such as machine learning to be able to provide what we can provide to them.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how are you solving for it? Is this more of a technology problem, or is this more of a chemistry problem, or is it the combination?
So first was to, so we use fragments of what you have in your nose. So in your nose, you have proteins that make actually the smell, the capture of the smell, if you will, right? So we speak about olfactive, volatile olfactive compounds, right? And so they will bind actually on proteins, right? So we use fragments of proteins actually to mimic, you know, what you have in your nose. So the challenge was to, you know, graft these, you know, fragments of proteins onto silicone to make it actually efficient. And again, the rationale for using silicone is very much about, you know, making this low cost, high volume, you know, small dimension. Right? So that was one challenge, which was really a chemistry type of challenge. Then the next challenge was to make actually this transducer, which is using silicone, very effective, right? So we had to fix or to solve issues like, you know, we're using an optical phenomenon, right? So we need optical expertise to make it actually efficient. And then you have electronics on top of it. And then once you have sold all of that stuff, you need to, you know, plug it to some kind of a machine learning engine, right? So you have to yet develop this, right? So it's very multidisciplinary, right? And once you have all of this, now you start to scratch your head about, you know, what do I do with an olfaction sensor, right? So what is it good for, right? So you have to learn about, you know, how to prepare a specific sample, how to, you know, duplicate the preparation of a specific sample. So if you want to prepare a 5 ppmv sample of strawberry, well, it's not that obvious. You need to get, you know, some pretty good expertise, thanks to IFF, by the way. So you have yet another dimension, if you will, of expertise which is required. So it's, again, it's very, very multidisciplinary, and that's what I really like about this activity, is that, you know, we have, you know, chemists, we have optical engineers, we have electronic engineers, we have mechanical engineers, because, yeah, I forgot to mention that you realize that your nose actually sniff, right? So there is fluidics involved. So you need to pump, right? You need to sniff also, right? So you have also fluidics on top of it. So that's yet another kind of expertise. So that's many, many types of expertise that you have to gather and bring together to make it work. So
yeah, that's an interesting point you're touching on. And I want to hear, how did you solve for the talent problem? Because I assume you needed to hire machine learning engineers, and you needed mechanical engineers and chemists and psychologists and so on. So how did you organize the talent to work on the technology and the solution you're building?
Well, first of all, we have among 50, 60 people, we have about 10 citizenship, right? So you don't find all of them locally, of course. It's a good question. I guess we had the right network, and then I think that maybe the company is appealing enough so that people actually also come to us. We are very active also when it comes to promote actually job openings, right? So we have people from all over, right? You know, from South America all the way to China, India, Russia, the US, of course, France, Germany. So we have people from all over. So I think it comes down also to, you know, having something which is attractive, right? On company itself. The location, you know, we are in a very nice and attractive place also in the middle of the French Alps. So that helps, of course, right? I think people like challenges, and especially, you know, young engineers and young PhDs, they like to tackle, you know, new things. That's definitely where we are, for sure.
So do you think that you have now a heightened sense of smell? I'm sure you get to smell a lot of beautiful scents.
Males are not known to have a very developed sense of smell compared to women.
Right? Really? I didn't know that.
So I would not actually consider myself as an expert when it comes to olfaction, right? Definitely not.
Yeah, you're solving this interesting problem, and you have 55, 60 people working for you. I want to understand the other side of it. How did you convince the investors and the VCs to invest in the technology you're building?
That's a very good point, actually. When you pitch your story, you know, that's what a CEO of a startup does, right? I mean, you pitch your story, right? When you pitch your story, you don't have anything to refer to when it comes to olfaction, right? There is no business in olfaction today, or very, very dismal. So you have to pitch a story where, essentially you will have, an electric nose in your smartwatch tomorrow, right? And yeah, but what for, right? So you have to come up with, so it's not speculation because you want to make it real and you want people to be able to almost touch it, right? So you have to provide actually, you have to go step by step, right? And come with, your background and say, okay, our initial step will be, to prove that this technology can do the job, right? And once, this technology, and I'm talking about the chemical technology to start. And then, my next step will be to bring this onto silicon. And if I can get there, now I really have a business because I can build and duplicate, this sensor, with a significant volume. And then you have to bring along, some credible people because, you pitch a story, but you're not that credible, right? So you need to bring actually industrial partners with you. And we've been very, very lucky to attract five very significant industrial players, and it's public information. So IFF is an investor into our company also. Azaikaze, which is a Japanese conglomerate also, is an investor in our company. We have Hyundai also, the car maker, who is also an investor in our company. Samsung is an investor, and then the group Seb, which is also a small appliance manufacturer in Europe. So all of them come with their credibility, with their background, and essentially they bring credit to your story, right? Yes, eventually I will be able to use such a sensor in my car, because when it comes to car sharing, making sure that the cabin is clean and the guy before has not left a sandwich or has not smoked in the car, it matters for us, operators, Hyundai, for instance, right? So, then actually you strengthen your story as you have testimonials coming from, parties like them, right? So I think that's how we've done it, right? We start pitching a technological pitch, and then after we evolve into something a little bit more industrial, and then we try to bring actually testimonials to make our story more credible for the people around us. Yeah.
I like that you have industry players, the consumer of your product, as investors in your company. I find that very interesting. And I think the dynamics are very different when you have the consumer of your product also as investor in your product versus having a standard typical financial VC firm. So the question I have for you is, what advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur that's working on a hard problem where they're solving for something that's out there, just like you did with smell? How should they approach an investor, and what should they do to get an investor excited and interested in what they're building?
First, I think, usually you start with financial investors who are a little bit more, or less risk adverse, I should say, right, than industrial players. It's an interesting, actually, point. I find that, our initial investors were financial investors. And that, they've been able to, help us mature and finance the beginning of the company until we could actually be appealing enough for industrial players, right? So I think it's a mix of, financial investors together with industrial, actually, investors. I think that makes a proper balance, right? I just wanted to highlight, actually, this point. I don't know, actually, what works after what kind of advice, I can give. I think it has to do probably a lot with how passionate you are about, what you want to pitch, right? And how credible you are with your background. It's my fifth startup, and I failed actually on one. I don't know why. I think maybe it comes from the fact that I was not actually familiar at all with the industry I was targeting, while actually the other four companies I've been involved in have been much more successful, and I think I fit more into this industry, right? So I think there is a matter of fitting, right? And whatever background you have, actually, you fit or not, or you don't fit as well in some industries, right? So that's my personal experience. But, you know, I can convey my passion when I'm into an industry that I understand, and I use the right vocabulary, I use the right, you know, behavior, I dress the right way, I don't know. But I can tell you that another industry, I didn't fit at all. It did not work well. So that's maybe that's, as opposed to advice, it's sharing my experience, I guess.
No, thank you, Sam. And that kind of ties into my next question. Now, you've had 5 startups. You are a true entrepreneur. Along your journey, do you feel like you've had to have a certain mindset to overcome obstacles, challenges, get creative ideas? And how did you transition from that mindset, maybe from startup to startup?
If I have one talent, is to be surrounded by the right people. I think that's, you know, how the best I can summarize the whole thing, right? I very often consider myself, you know, like the director of an orchestra. I know a little bit of piano, but I'm very bad at piano. I know a little bit of violin, but I'm very bad at violin. I know a little bit of, you know, a trumpet, but I'm very bad at trumpet. But I know how to spot the right trumpetist. I know how to spot the right violinist and the right pianist. Right? That's really how I see myself, right? And luckily, I've been able to, and at Toribal, we have, you know, outstanding people. So they are the one doing the right thinking, the smart thing, and I'm just conducting, I guess, right? So that's the easy part. I really find it the easy part, right? I think, you know, if you have this recipe, you apply it from one company to another. It's just a matter of finding the right people, I guess, right?
Yeah, having that eye for the talent, but also enough know-how about the technology to see the right combination where they meet is the secret sauce, I think. So now, as you look towards the future, where do you see the technology in your company, say 5 years from now and then 10 years from now?
After we have proven that we can make this actually a sensor which is really, really mass market and compatible with many, many applications, for me, the ultimate goal is to have actually such a sensor that helps you in your daily life, right? And in particular, it's not speculation anymore, right? But, you know, there is a lot of, you know, academic work that has been done on health and olfaction, right? And I can very much see that, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, you know, you will start in the morning, you will blow actually on your watch, on your connected device, one way or another, and it will run some kind of a, you know, health assessment on you, right? And I very much believe that, like, that's how, you know, this technology will really reach, you know, its, you know, ideal goal, I guess, right? Which is have a significant contribution in, you know, in everybody's life, right? And health, of course, as we know, is critical. And if you could have, you know, such an easy way of making, you know, a rough assessment of your health condition, that would be, we would have reached our goal for sure.
And for all the industry leaders listening, do you have advice for the industry leaders that are out there?
I think the way Ari was asking this is very much the way I'm looking at things, right? Is, you know, where do we want to be 5 to 10 years from now, right? And where and how do you want to contribute to, you know, what's going to be out there in 5 to 10 years from now? It's not always easy to, you know, just your small entity today, and then you have this technology that has the capability to really have a significant impact on the world, right? But it's not always easy to see, right? So you really have to believe into your vision and thinking that, yes, you know, it can be very disruptive, right? So you have to have this kind of long-term vision and really stick to it and really believe in it, right? So I don't know if it's an advice, but, you know, trying to have some faith in your future and your contribution in the future. I think that, yeah, that's the one.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. The final question I have for you is, now, looking back at your journey of building this startup and starting with the idea and coming this far where you are, if you have the opportunity to do one thing differently, what would that thing be, given the hindsight you have now? Is there anything you would do differently knowing what you know now?
Well, that's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. I do think we have amazing people today. We can really leverage from being on many different locations. we were, of course, like everybody else, you know, severely impacted by the travel ban, right? Because, you know, our customers are not in Grenoble, if they are in the US or in Asia. So we just opened up an office in Asia, which is actually really, really good. So I think, yeah, we are now in the situation where we can really leverage from this, you know, international representation, which help us bring, you know, people on board. What would I have done different? I don't know. I don't think much, actually. I think it's a good combination. It's a good alignment of stars, right? And we are working on aligning the stars even more.
So. Glad to hear that. Hey, Sam, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. This was super fun for us. I know you're on vacation, and I really appreciate you taking time to be with us and share your experience and journey with us. So thank you for being on with us. It's much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you so much for being here today. If you like what you heard and are interested in more, visit us online at brainsbehind.ai and sign up for my monthly AI startup tracker. That's where I cut through the noise and bring you AI startups that are making tangible progress. Till next time, go out, be the brains behind AI.